Onrush, a city where the sun is a mirror and the moon a shadow, where dancers cavort in forbidden operas, making love to forgetting and flame, where the wealthy play at war with silver swords and silken sashes, where the people mine the dead heart of a burning star for cannonballs and pipework, and where a thousand secrets hide in a forest of paper and ink. Here, the five keybearers reside, the five who know the secrets of the broken gates of death. Five. Five only. There is no sixth spire, forlorn and forgotten in the desert. There is no one who looks to the displaced, the poor and destitute and landless, whose ancestry has been stripped from them by foreign looms and foreign sparkcraft, and no one has ever heard of the House of Endings. But this is their story. Their roots pulled up and burned, they stand in filth up to their necks, and that is precisely why they must keep their heads ever high. Welcome to Uduasha, immigrant. May it fear the name of the house you will build. Welcome to Desperate Attoon, an actual play podcast about characters with their identities in peril, played by an international cast devoted to fiction-first gaming, collaborative world-building, and complex character drama. Welcome back to Desperate Attoon, everyone, where this episode we are doing some fighting. We are doing a duel, in fact, because last session Bidrohi set up a challenge with Malera Clev to a duel, and then immediately figured she was going to cheat, and the crew started to take countermeasures against Malera Clev cheating. The reason for this duel, of course, was that Malera Clev had attempted to kidnap and or kill both Saida and Mumtaz, and actually successfully poisoned Saida, who is still unconscious in Clem's friend's hospital / clinic / the space under a kebab sauna.
Yes.
And that's where we are. A quick reminder, if you have enjoyed listening and you are with us so far, we have a Patreon. We say it at the end of the episodes, but I now say it at the beginning of the episodes. And if you want to join our Patreon, you also get to hear our behind-the-scenes bantering as we do XP and discuss what we're going to do next week. So there's
that. We also have a Ko-Fi.
We also have a Ko-Fi. That is correct. If you want to buy us some coffee.
If you just want to give us money and get nothing in return.
Yes. Thank you for shouting in that bit of information. So I think that brings us up to speed about what is going on. And so we rolled an engagement roll last session, so we are going to jump pretty much straight into the action. But speaking of the behind-the-scenes banter you can get access to with Patreon, some of that behind-the-scenes banter included Clem having a flashback. And so we're going to start this session on Clem having a flashback. And then we will jump into the score.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to tell us what your plan is, Clem? And it's a money-making plan.
Oh, yeah. We've got to make some money off of this. So last session, Clem spent most of their cash on, or at least their ancestral steel that they've been forging with their money, on hiring the Bone Shakers to not turn up to the duel. And afterwards, she has decided she's going to be betting on Bidrohi. She's putting all of the rest of the money she's earned into Bidrohi to get some cash back out of this duel, because the Rising Moon is not doing so well on that front at the moment. We need cash and we need it ASAP.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and how much cash are you? How much cash is it you're putting up? Just to clarify, like in character, what a big.
Yeah. So I've got 2 stash left, which is 1 coin. So it's probably a good. I think this is actually cash as well. She's handing over. It's not weaponry. Yeah. This is so a satchel very full last of clinking your coin. Yeah.
Yes. It's a satchel full of clinking coin, and it's your very last life savings, like the very last money you have from whatever you did before this. So it's a fairly large bet. So I think this will put you in charge with one of the notables
of the Boneshaker crew. Probably not the actual boss of the gang, because he has more important things to do, but definitely one of their like more well-known bookies. And so I think, you're going to meet with a person of some importance, and that person is going to be Flash, who is noted down as a confident, cruel, and can read your mind guy, who is in charge of a lot of the gambling operations. And so, does anyone know who introduced this NPC?
It was me.
Okay.
It was me, Austin.
Then Chloe, you want to detail this handsome fellow Flash a little bit?
I just imagined a very, very dapper man who's strolls into casinos and so on, or he'll be in like any kind of thing, but he'll always be dressed well. Like he'll go to like the more upscale like gambling joints. We never really discussed whether or not casinos legally are a thing, but like probably they aren't. But like he'll go to like the big betting games and he'll show up like dressed well. He'll go to like the backyard craps games and he'll be shown up dressing well. And he will absolutely clean every single motherfucker out mercilessly.
So when you say dress well, is he a Tumdurji fan? Does he share me with Taylor?
I say it's like... Okay, now I'm imagining that bit in Django Unchained, where Django has to dress in that, in like holes and like with a big bow tie and so on at the very start. I don't know if this landing, but he's got like breeches, he's got like big socks and so on. He's got this gigantic like bow tie. So no, it's not, it's dressed ostentatiously, but it's not a Tumdurji style, no.
Okay, yeah. Excellent. So I'm imagining this fellow. He runs like a gambling ring. I think basically Clem has flashed enough cash that you are shown to this man who handles the big jobs, right? And I mean, you have enough goodwill with the Bone Shakers because you've already paid them huge sums of money. So it would be pretty gosh for them to steal this last money now, which is otherwise what they would do, right? But you're shown into this man's office. We haven't really established where in Uduasha the Bone Shakers hang out. I don't imagine it is all too much in Bundervest, although maybe it is. Maybe it's just not the hospitality ghetto. I think actually that makes sense. A lot of them are from outside the city, but they're like older immigrants. They're not with the recent crush. So I think it makes sense that it's Bundervest, but not like the, you know, the nice parts of Bundervest insofar as these exist.
Yeah, maybe. They also seem like foreign quarters or Pasaran to people.
Yeah.
Or even Ancestor.
Yeah. Yeah, they're probably spread out throughout them. But let's say that this is in a nicer part of Bundervest, which means that it is in kind of like a tower that overlooks the river. I say tower, but it's like a 2 or 3 story building, so it's a little bit up. He has an office that's more well-ventilated.
Hmm.
And you walk into this office with a view over the river behind him, and he kind of looks you up and down. Is anyone else with Clem, or is Clem going alone?
It depends on whether Clem would have told anyone else about this. So, it's up to Clem.
I think they've told Mushfik about this. Probably not Bidrahi, because I don't think Bidrahi would want to earn money on his wonderful skills. Or at least Clem doesn't. Mm-hmm.
So Mushfik honorable. Is also here.
Yeah, Mushfik is also here.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
He's so good at doing social things together.
I think it's very much in character for Mushfik to be here betting on Bidrahi's deadly duel.
Absolutely. So this man is, he pours you some drinks and he slides them forth and he flashes a very, very wide grin that seems almost too big for his face. Mm-hmm. And he says, I understand you're here to bet big. Let me just say, I love that for you. And
that's it.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, he's waiting for some elaboration, but he just says, like, I love that for you. And he slides you the drinks. And, like, expect you to explain, because, I mean, he doesn't know that this duel is happening, right? It's not like it's a public thing. Clemens just said the word that you want to make a big bet, and that's when you see Flash.
Yes.
Is that roughly how you'd imagine it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, our friend is dueling Malera Clev. Your people were hired for it. I paid them off not to. Now we want to pay draw a crowd, get some bets going, and hopefully make a whole lot of money. And you'll make a whole lot of money as well, right? House always wins.
Well, of course, we were aware of this little affair, but to make it a sporting engagement, that's bold. That's bold. You know, she paid us quite well, but you also paid us quite well, and I see huge potential here. Yeah, big potential profit. All right. Now, you're betting on your boy to win. And you have any idea who might bet against?
I think Clem looks at Shvig. Are you? We're not playing both sides. We're betting it all on Vidrahi. Okay.
Yeah. Shvig says that in answer to it, says that to Flash's question, is that, well, most people would bet for my Lyric Club.
Yeah. If they knew about the fight, you want us to build some PR. Is that it? You want us to get the word out?
Sure. I mean, Mylora Clev fighting against some backwater peasants seems like a very easy way for the public to make, you know, some money. But they don't know what we know.
Well, they know you managed to win a fight at the Colosseum.
And they didn't get to see it. This is a charity match. Right?
Okay. Sorry to do this to Vidrahi, but I'll take Flash around like, yeah. At the Coliseum, but it wasn't him that was there. It was a real guy. This is just some kid, you know. People would take one look at his like scrawny ass. They won't expect him to last 5 minutes.
Okay, I feel like Mushfik, when you do this, you are attempting to persuade him. So I think this is some sort of action, and like he is absolutely going to go ahead with this. But I think let's make this. I think this is sway as a fortune roll. There's no risk here, but the question is how much work can you persuade this guy to put in to, because it's in his interest to draw a lot of people placing a lot of bets.
All right.
Let's see if you can convince him to put in.
I have a devil's bargain.
Effort. Yes. Uh-huh.
Which is that maybe not Omid, maybe not Necktie, but someone in Jasper's Jizilchis is going to bet against us and is going to try to make sure that he wins.
That's okay, one of Jasper's. Sure.
Yeah. We haven't seen Jasper himself as well. Maybe not.
I don't think it will be Omid, but we don't know that much about this motley crew, actually. We've only seen Omid from it, so.
And Necktie.
Necktie. Yeah, he presumably still being friends with Moss. He's on Moss's contact sheet. So.
Well, maybe it's Jasper himself, who knows.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think this is a great devil's bargain. Do you accept it?
I do accept it. Because it is a great devil's bargain.
Okay.
I do need bonus die because I have none in sway.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a one.
It's a one. Yeah. So what is going to happen here is that you are... I guess you can spend money to increase this, but it doesn't really make any sense. That's just like betting more big. What is going to happen here because of this role is Flash is convinced that this is going to be a money-making deal, and he is absolutely going to like rattle up an audience. However, he is not taking any sort of precautions to ensure that a fair fight happens. The Bone Shakers were already bribed to be left out of this.
Mm-hmm.
And so the consequence of rolling low here is not that you will like necessarily make less money, but the Bone Shakers will be utterly unhelpful. Like, they're going to collect some winnings after this. If you win, they're going to pay some out to you, and that is the extent of their involvement.
Right, okay, so they're just a very, very low risk, low stakes for them.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And the other thing, of course, is this means they will drum up an audience and not like do anything to tell the audience, like, don't interfere, because it doesn't really matter to them who wins. So I think this aligns perfectly well with the Devil's Bargain, basically. Like, you invoked Jasper and the Gisalties as a Devil's Bargain, and now the Bone Shakers are like, yeah, if they shoot Vidrahi, that's fine. We still collect the winning.
It's a free-for-all.
Yeah.
You get to fight. You get to have a fight.
Yes. Well, however,
fair is fair.
Mm-hmm. However, how we'll handle this, I think, is we will take away Clem's money for now, but there will be a sizable payoff here, like maybe something like 4 to 6 coin, depending on how things go. So, like, you can get a 4x payout, just because I think that's interesting. So there will be some coin in it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Fair.
Remind me, do we know where we're fighting?
Murder Alley.
Yes.
Murder Alley. Of course.
Yeah. I had a request for this, by the way, Prince, for something that might add some interesting texture to the score. How this request will then line up with having an audience, I don't know, but what I was thinking is that this is at the very bottom of Pasaran 2. So I would like it to be dark as hell.
Yes, it is. I was going to get to that, actually.
Okay, good.
It is a very dark place. It is lit. Like, you don't see the Udu and the mirror down here very much. And it is populated by scavengers, right? Like, the Rakshasa collect a lot of goodies from here, from the dead. And there's also a lot of just critters that collect what they can from the dead. The usual, like, rats, roaches, things like that. So, yeah, it's dark. It's unpleasant. And I suppose we may as well cut to it, because we've already rolled the engagement roll.
Cool.
So, back in the present, this is exactly what it looks like. It is deep, deep, deep down under the many crisscrossing rope bridges and stairs and ramshackle houses in the district, in the vertical maze of market and murder that is set into the side of the crater where Uduasha resides. And it's a confusing complex. And all the way down at the bottom, there is very little light. There is this one alleyway that's almost like a tunnel, except it doesn't have a clear ceiling. There's a bunch of people watching and around over it. And the thing is here, you're going to get an audience, but you're going to get an audience of the sort of people who feel safe hanging around Murder Alley, which is not, you know, this is not going to be an audience of, like, the wealthy or the remotely safe people to be around. This is going to be the most cutthroat merchant in the entire district. Yep. Creeping up above you. Some of them holding up candles to look down at you. And someone, maybe it's Mylera Clev, maybe it's the Bone Shakers, maybe it's someone else, has hung up 2 lanterns at either end of the alley, which means that it gets progressively darker towards the center of it. And they're lanterns that are, like, creaking slowly, faintly in the wind. And we see the silhouette of Mylera Clev, backlit by hers, enter the alley, right? And she is dressed in very long robes, like a lot of heavy folds to her clothes. She has a hood up. She has, she wears a lot of layers. And she is very obviously in, like, a lot of load, as like concealed by the clothes. But yeah, and she has her sword already drawn. It's a long, fine blade, gently curved. And she just holds it out to her side to strike this, like, impressive backlit profile. And as she steps into the darker area at the center, she just says, like, I understand you wanted to do this yourself, whoever the hell you are.
So it's just me on the other side, I guess?
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah. Like, I think the idea is you have seconds, but they stay behind the lantern. So
I think I step forward and I say, my name is Bidrohi Ankatam. You have attempted to kidnap my lover, and you have also poisoned my ustad. These are the crimes that I lay against you.
And you wanted this to be to the death, is it?
Could I persuade you to leave me and my people alone if it is not to the death? And could I persuade you and you, would you be honest?
You ask this question, and she like shrugs, and she says, maybe, depends on what you got. And I think it's clear to you that she's actually transparently lying. It's convenient for her to appear to be this like morally flexible person in this moment. But like, she is loyal to Ustad J. Clev. And Ustad J. Clev is not backing off.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I think Bidri kind of just sighs and says, "Do you know I have never killed anyone in my life? But I had trained with the sword every day. And I kind of like take out my blade, not my sword, but like my sidearm blade. And I say, now this is a knife. A knife is used for cutting many things, you know, tomatoes, onions, making some, you know, wood carvings and so on. And then I kind of like draw out my sword and say, but there is only one purpose to a sword. And I have been training for that purpose, and it seems silly as hell for me to not use it on the person who has attempted to destroy what I love. So, suppose this is where either I die or I become murderer. That's how it is."
Uh-huh. Yeah. She, there is a grimness to her. Like, this is still all quite serious. And she, like, lifts her sword, swipes it through the air a couple of times, and she says, "Fortunately for you, either one will not matter. You'll be forgotten."
We shall see either way. And then I think before we kind of like, we're still like in a ceremonial phase, so I think we both have to like agree to step forward to the thing so we can talk before that. At least that's the rules. We can see.
Yeah, exactly.
They, I think I'll say.
It's like a certain distance from the lanterns. I think they are sort of the boundary marker. But she is approaching now. She is like getting done with talking. But yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I think then I'll leave the banter for later. But what I'm going to do is say, I'm going to take the blade that I had, and then I'm going to pull out a cloth. I'm going to take the blade and I'm going to cut my palm open. And then I'm going to squeeze it on the cloth.
Yeah.
And then I will say, "In darkness, murder is done." And I'm going to blindfold myself with the bleeding cloth and step forward. "I have acquired an asset. I have the blessings of She Who Slays in the Dark. And for this purpose, I will not need to see."
Okay, excellent. I feel like your first action is attune here, actually. Like, you have acquired this asset, and now you're using it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's see if that works then.
So it's risky standard, and I think with standard effect here, what you can get is, it's pitch black anyway in here, right? So it's not like it's a bright day and you go from can see perfectly well to completely blind. But if you succeed here with standard effect, you will not be worse off than Mylares, who can see at least a little bit.
Mm.
So that's the standard effect. Like, it'll be... with standard effect, it'll be fair, sort of.
I would like to see better than her.
Okay, sure. So. You can trade for Desperate Great, and I think the main way to do this is to actually speak a prayer. To actually, like, invoke the name of She Who Slays in the Dark.
Yeah. So I think he begins to mutter, "Mother of Darkness. Inside darkness we are born, inside mothers we are born, inside darkness we are born, inside mothers we are born, in darkness mothers will slay us, in darkness mothers will slay us."
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, do I have a devil's bargain for you here? I think I might.
Give me something to do with my actual mother?
I was going in a different direction, actually. Mm-hmm. And I think it's that... we have not established the relationship of this deity of the lower city with the other deities that surround you and have been acting around you. Yeah, I think a suitable devil's bargain here is that you speak this name and you will draw the attention of something else. And I was going to go with the Prince of Endings, but like, I don't think that makes a tremendous amount of sense here. What I do think makes sense, in the darkness, I mentioned that there's vermin and so on scattering about this. I think you can take a devil's bargain to once more get the attention of the dirt under Ixis's feet because Ixis is a demon prince of moving in the dark. And I think if you take this devil's bargain, the cockroaches will be on your side.
Yay!
This is not a big boon, and it has downsides.
Do I want to be the cockroach guy? That's the main thing. Aesthetically, do I want to be the cockroach guy?
This is indeed how I'm framing it.
You get the reputation of being a cockroach guy.
I mean, the demon whose attention you have and who has attempted to possess you before is a demon of creepy, crawly things. Yeah. So.
Nah, I think Bidruhi wants to win and he wants to avenge his ustad and all that, but not at the price of becoming cockroach guy.
Fair enough.
So I am going to make an argument for using this ability. Gallant.
Especially impressive. Mm-hmm.
Because I did do rituals and so on to gain the lady's boon. And now I am attempting to forge an intimate connection with her.
Okay, sure. I mean, so you can take this die, but it does mean forging an intimate connection with a forgotten god. Just pointing that out. That's not a devil's bargain. That's just part of it. So if you want to use your gallant ability where you get plus one die to forge an intimate connection with someone you've impressed, then sure. Yeah. You can use this on She Who Slays in the Dark.
Excellent. That gives me one total dice. Is there any way either one of you can assist me?
With this attune roll?
Any way at all?
I'm thinking, let me think.
So you're trading position for effect. So it's desperate, great, and you have one die.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is why I would like one more. Mm-hmm. Just a crumb of dice.
Yeah, go ahead.
Maybe I can assist you, like, not like with through actual tuning, but maybe Mushfix just had a talk with Bidruhi beforehand, you know, to prep him for battle, you know, calm your nerves, that kind of thing. Because you may not have killed anyone, but Mushfix has killed so many times. So many times. Tell me about
the many times that you have killed people and how they have traumatized you for life and left you a broken shell of a man who cannot relate to other human beings.
Okay, sure, why not? Let's do that. You know. All right, yeah, let's do that. Like, you know, before the silent flight, you just get... Is that the question you asked? You just walked up to Mushfik and went, Shirakazam, tell me about all the people that you killed?
Yeah, I mean, why not? Right. We're boys. Sure, we can speak boy to boy.
All right, okay. all the people that I killed, you know, there's a nervous laughter, and he goes, you know, the funny thing is, it gets easier every time.
Tell me about how it can be easy first time.
I don't even remember the first man I killed. It's been just a sea of endless faces, you know? Remember. When you take a life for the first time, it changes you. It changes you into a different man. And, well, I suppose one thing I can tell you is this. Once you're killed for the first time, like... it'll be easier to kill again and again, and you won't, like, at one point, it just doesn't feel that bad anymore. Mm. Oh, God. Anyway, that's your assist.
We hug it out, and Bidruhi takes comfort in this thing. You know, it'll be really hard the first time, but, you know, he has no illusions about any of this. Yeah. He's not, like, so he's not doing sword fighting just because sword fighting is cool. He knows what a sword is. He knows that it's been leading up to this moment eventually.
I want to point out that that it's interesting that Mushfik brings this up, given that last session we learned that he killed Al-Qadir's brother, too. So, yep.
Shirakatam, you look very haunted lately. Is something the matter? Did you remember killing someone you shouldn't have? So I'm taking two Domino's dice. I also had some extra XP sloshing around, so I just decided to put one in a tune. Why the hell not? So now I have 3 dice total.
3 dice, desperate attune, let's go.
Yeah, it's a 5.
Okay, so you roll a 5, a 4, and a 2.
Mm-hmm.
And this means that part of it is you succeed, right? Which means that you will have heightened senses. You will actually be able to handle blades in the dark better than Mylera is. Because, you know, she can see a little, but you have... a murderous god guiding you throughout it. So I don't think it's that like your vision returns and you like get dark vision or anything. It's just like a preternatural instinct comes over you.
Yeah.
Where, you know, hearing, sense of touch, all of this compensates for it.
For so long as the purpose is murder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, there is this eerie like blood over your eyes, heightened awareness, your heart beats. And yeah, I don't think there's any reason to frame this as anything else. So you have the upper hand in this fight. That is the result of your great effect. It also is stylish as hell.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it does look very cocky, and it impresses. Like, I, you know, that's also obviously an important part of this, blindfolding yourself. It looks hella badass. So, mm-hmm. Those things are accomplished. The desperate consequence is that as soon as you step into the dark, and the audience can't see exactly what's going on, so as soon as you step out of the lamplight, like, you put this on in the lamplight, so people can see you do it, and then you step into the dark, and then Mylera hits you with a throwing knife.
Where does it hit me?
Central body mass, just in the chest.
Hmm.
And I mean, she's a scoundrel. She is. This is a duel, but also, fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
that's fair enough. We never specified what kind of weapons.
No, exactly, and it is still a blade.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm.
Blade for blade. Okay.
Yep.
Cool.
Dodge at Matrix style.
Yeah. First, I'm going to mark armor. Second, I'm going to mark armor. First, I'm going to mark armor and resist with armor. So it does hit me in the chest, but yep. I am wearing, I don't know, some sort of like scale armor under my clothes or something.
Yep.
So what does it do?
Mm-hmm. So you trade into this desperate position, and Mylera can't see exactly if this were like perfect conditions, she could have killed you with this and it would have been a level 4 harm instantly. Yeah. In this context, it's a level 3. It's meant to debilitate you, to set you up so that she can like effortlessly kill you.
Mm-hmm.
Or like that's what she hoped to accomplish. And yeah. I think that's fair to frame it's a level 3, and then you mark armor, so that bumps it down to level 2.
Level 2. Okay. And then I'm going to resist on top of that. And the way I'm going to resist is... Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to mark, because if I had like tried to block it, I would have resisted with prowess.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to resist with resolve. And the way I'm going to resist with resolve is that I'm not going to care.
Okay. Yeah.
I am not really the avatar of a forgotten god, but I am. I have a blessing of a forgotten god of murder and death, and I will not care.
Okay. Yes. So, if you resist with resolve, then I think rather than just downgrade this to a level 1 harm and call you bruised, which is the boring thing to do,
mm-hmm.
I am going to downgrade it to a level 1 harm, and it's a temporary harm that will go away after this fight, and it is just called bloodthirst. Because, you know, you are an avatar of a forgotten god in this moment, you take the forgotten god into you, and so there is no pain, but you now actively get less effect on anything that isn't murder.
Hmm. Nice.
Yep.
Very cool. Yeah.
It's just it's a level 1 harm. It will go away after this fight, or as soon as the goddess's spirit leaves you.
Mm. I resisted.
And you roll a critical on resisting and lose 1 stress. It turns out it's quite comfortable to have the goddess move within you.
Yeah. Hell yeah. As it should be.
Yes.
So I step forward like this. What's everyone up to?
Yeah. Where are the other people?
Well, yeah, I suppose what Wishwick's up to depends on. So, who else is there? Do we see Mario Lechlev's underlings scurrying about, or?
This is the thing. Since the light is very bad, the only people that can be seen clearly are Bidruhi and Mylera Clev. There are other people in like the faint candlelight above the audience, quote unquote. Right? There's like crowds here, but it's dark enough that you can't make out any faces.
So, right, okay. Well, in that case, I guess the obvious thing to do is, since we know she's bringing underlings, is to find out where they are.
Yep, this makes sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she was going to recruit some mercenaries, but she is also having, like, at least a second of her own, and possibly some other allies that... Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's already been established this is not going to be a fair fight. You can absolutely try to look for them. How do you go about doing this? Are you creeping up above the alleyway, looking down on what's going on, or...?
I think... what Mushvig's doing is, like, if he were to do something like this, then he would have his people just in the crowd, right? So he's surveying the crowd and, you know, just looking at the body language, right? Mm-hmm. Like, who looks like they're here just to, you know, just to watch the fight, and who's there looking like they're about to do something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. Right. Yeah, I think you can do this. I think it's risky, standard. And the risk is just moving about in the crowds in Murder Alley, where there are lots of people with lots of motivation to do all sorts of nasty things.
All right, yeah. And... oh, well, I don't think I need any balls today. Whatever. That's a three.
Okay. It's a three. So you will find someone who is present.
All right.
Someone who has interest in keeping an eye on this. Someone who is very invested in preventing gang wars in Bundervest, and who has come all the way out here to Passerhantu to survey it. It's Captain Peregrine. He's here.
Yeah.
So you fail the roll, so you don't find any of her people, but you do find Peregrine, and the consequence is just he's present. One of the Falconers, he's undercover, obviously, but I think you recognize him by, like, his small stature and his peculiar mannerisms. And then, like, you catch a glimpse of his face in the crowd. And yeah, you can resist this, in which case I think fictionally it's just like, oh, wait, that's not him. That's just the guy who looks like him or something like that. But
I'm trying to imagine the strange mannerism you recognize him by or would recognize him by.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's just like one of those people who's always nodding his head up and down.
Yeah, I think so. He's unusually also polite and well-mannered, which fits poorly in this context. So yeah, I think...
Excuse me, I need to get past.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. Oh yeah, that's totally... Yes. Thank you, Salty. This is what I'm going with. Like, you look your way through the crowd and you hear like, pardon me, excuse me, as he weaves his way through the crowd.
I'm not going to resist it, if that's okay with everyone. I think, you know... Let him be here. We'll deal with that separately.
Let him cook.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. So he's here. And what is Clem up to?
Clem is ostensibly the second for this. So I feel like Clem's going to be standing just behind the lantern. But I think I'm going to flashback to lay some traps in the alley and cause some issues for my Lara Clev.
Okay, that is perfect because I had also thought that this is exactly what my Lara Clev has. So I think this flashback will not be straightforward. So this is probably just
amazing.
A flashback like an hour or so earlier, right? Because you can't do it like... well ahead of time. It's still a place that gets used.
Yeah. I don't want to interfere with any other murders going on here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that we see this flashback to you entering the alley to get this prepared. And you will, in this flashback, see a person skulking about and some wires being drawn up over this place. And yeah, what in this flashback, what do you do?
Clem is waiting in the shadows until they can see the face of whoever is doing this. I think they're weighing up whether to come out and just confront them or whether it's going to be better to, could I take them? Is what she's thinking. Could I take them? And if not, can I fuck up their traps enough so that he's got the advantage?
It sounds like this is some sort of action. Like we're doing this not as a spend stress flashback, but as a flashback with risk and consequences. I think that's fine because we haven't established where Clem is in the score itself, really, other than as a second. So it's some sort of action. It's risky standard to like size them up, try to figure out if you can outwit them. And with standard effect, you will find a way to do so, but there is risk.
course there's risk. And I think this is certainly survey taking in the situation, trying to figure out, am I best, where am I best positioned to be here? Yeah, nice.
Okay, let's see this. Do you want a devil's bargain?
What's the devil's bargain?
Let me take a look at your character sheet for a moment. Let me remember if this makes sense. No, it doesn't make sense, actually. Never mind, I don't have a devil's bargain. At least, not one that doesn't overly complicate the scene. So.
Cool, no worries. Yeah, I think... a bit too early to push myself, I'll just go with a... Just go, no bonus die.
Yep.
Not too bad. That's a five.
It's a five. Mm-hmm. Yes. So, the situation is, I think, you want to figure out what is going on with this person, and you do. So you will get the information. The downside is, unless you resist it, they are also going to notice you, like, moving about. Because rather than the person laying the traps does, their friend will. So they will be aware that something is going on. And
so the person who is meticulously laying these traps is a small Akorosi man in a gray suit. He is like very meticulously laying out wires to crisscross for like trip wires to trigger things. And there is someone with him. So basically what you have here is a pair of a leech and a lurk, in Blade's terms. The leech is the guy laying the traps. The lurk is the person sneaking up behind you as you observe him laying the traps. So unless you resist it, there will be a person behind you asking some very uncomfortable questions.
I think, yeah, in terms of resisting, I think it's going to be turning around, like just at the right time, going, you can't sneak up on me that easily.
Mm-hmm. Very
this
good.
Is, I this think is that's... murder fucking early.
Yeah.
I feel like this is probably insight, right?
Yeah,
you can about sneak up to people in Murder Alley.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Where did
you
go?
Just do that right now. That's illegal. Yeah. Oh, and that's a six and a six, so I relieve stress by being sassy.
Yes.
Like, I've been here before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
nice try. I've done that before too.
Yeah. So the person behind you is a young woman wearing actually Iruvian shadow silk. She has a shadow cloak. So she is difficult to make out down here in the dark. But you hear her more than see her. See like the blade in her hand where she was going to like hold it at your throat and ask you some questions. You turn around, you look at her, and she just says, "All right, you know, that's fair enough. But we're doing some work here, and we would appreciate if you could, you know, avoid interfering, if that's all right with you."
Salty, out of character entirely, because Bidre would have no idea this is going on, right? It would be really, really helpful if you were to kidnap this person.
It would also be very...
Yes, because... Where did you get the shadow cell from? Tell me! It's not Tomb Durji! I want a signed statement that Tomb Durji would never sell you this!
For real, though.
Do you have a plan?
Like, I want that now. That's mine.
Yeah. Yeah. You totally can. Yeah. So how I'm going to frame this, as we're staying in this flashback, right? Clem, the option you have at this moment is, this person just wants you to leave. He is like, you know, fair enough. We are doing some work. If you spotted me, you spotted me. Now fuck off. So if you leave now, the benefit will be that you will know about these traps that Mylera has prepared. And you can just get out at this moment and bring this information back to Bidrahi. But if you want to accomplish more in this flashback, you can also. I think it's an interesting enough scene to stay in if you want to.
Yeah, I think we can stay in it. I think, yeah, I'm vicious. Fuck, like, these people are going to try and mess with somebody that I care for, or I'm starting to care for, and the cause that I like the sound of. Mm-hmm. Fuck them. No, that's not going to happen.
I like how you went from someone I care for to someone I'm starting to care for.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. I think we're going to facilitating in that kind of space.
Yeah.
So are you saying that's not going to happen to this person? Are you just trying to like intimidate them into letting you stay? Or are you doing something like attacking them?
They're right close to me, right? If I just
unlike
punch
Bidhi,
them
apparently.
In the face. Yeah. If I just punch them in the face and knock them out, like one punch and then turn on the lurk. Sabotage their stuff.
Yeah, I think they work as a pair. Like, I think you recognize the whole, like, you know, they work as a duo. And this woman who snuck up on you is definitely the security. The guy laying the traps is not a fighter. So if you clock his security, you'll be in an excellent negotiating position with him. Let's put it like that.
Yeah, I think I'm going to
mm-hmm. So
breach defense with force here.
Yeah, makes sense. So wreck.
Yeah, 100% wreck. This is what Clem is good at.
Yeah. However, I do think that you're in a desperate position. And this is just because, like, you were attacking this person unarmed. She has a knife. She's ready for you, and she's pointing it at you. And she knows how to use it. So, it's desperate standard to knock her out. But if you knock her out, the leech, I will tell you this, and I think Clem's instinct would, the leech actually poses no threat.
Mm.
So, standard effect here will, like, get rid of this duo entirely.
Awesome. If I tick off a blade or two, and by blade or two, I mean Clem has a hammer, and it's going to be one of those handheld Lucerne hammers, so that it's like a pickaxe, essentially, with a spike on top. It's a vicious little thing. It's nasty, nasty, nasty.
Yeah.
Would that increase my effect here? Or
It would increase your position, I think. You're in a risky standard position. My question with this is, are you willing to kill, or are you just going to just like injure? Okay, you're willing to kill.
I'm vicious. All right. I'm going to kill.
In that case, I think it's desperate great. And the great effect is just like killing this person and being able to take their stuff, right?
I'm going to take her stuff, I'm going to take this folk's stuff. Cool. Desperate great. Okay. Amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Fantastic. And I think this is totally not going to cause issues down the line at all. This is fine. Cool. Let's go. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to push myself or anything. That's a six.
That's a six.
Yeah, okay. 3, 6, and a one. Christ.
You lash out, lodge the pickaxe, and since this is a six, I will actually let you frame this a little bit, because part of the desperate consequences could have been like the heat and so forth, right? What can happen here is you have enough control of the situation that you can deliver a deadly wound and have one of these, like, have the trap guy drag his companion away, and maybe she will live and maybe she won't, but there will not be like bees and stuff on location. Or you can kill her instantly, in which case you can have her stuff, but it does draw the attention of the Rakshasa like an hour before you're having the duel. So I'll frame it to you a little bit how the outcome is, but if a person dies in Murder Alley, like right ahead of the duel, that people will notice, and
that's
going to
cause some issues. And
on the other hand, you get some stuff.
I think it's important that we get this stuff. I think it's the spike on the end gets lodged right, like, in... How do we feel about eye horror? It's right through the eye.
Okay. So you deliver, like, an instant blow, an instant kill. The Trapsmith realizes this, and he is just like, okay, well, this is way above my pay grade. And he is going to absolutely just like fuck off for now. I think he cares enough about his friend that he's probably going to like get back up and try to like get her out of here. But he's not confronting you himself. He is horrified. And so you can loot the body. Yay. And so
you asked for this.
How much XP did you get, huh?
Yes.
That's my XP.
So as this person falls, and I mean, you have been a soldier, right? Like you have been looting bodies in the grim sense of people at war rather than an adventurer. But you've seen the fine Shadow Silk cloak. And so I guess you can take that. Of relevance is also that this person has a gun. So.
Clem has a gun.
And they have a pistol. So now you have a pistol. Ho, ho, ho. I guess we're back to the present where Clem is starting this score weirdly with a gun and a Shadow Silk cloak. And of course, you can disable these traps, and you can set some of your own. But let's not overly like complicate that. I think in fact you can just like take the leech's trap and fuck around with them. However, a thing that will not be unestablished, of course, is that Mylera knows that there are traps about because
she just doesn't know what's going to happen.
You know what else happened that changed the scene during while we had this flashback?
Mm-hmm.
Moss is here.
Moss is here. Yes. So, what is happening is that Bidruhi and Mylera Clev are squaring off in a dark alleyway. There is a lantern at either end, so both of them can be seen, like, dimly. But at the very center of the thing, it's very dark. Bidruhi has put on a blindfold, but he has invoked the forgotten god, she who slays in the dark, to be able to slay in the dark. And so he can actually perceive his surroundings better than Mylera. And there is an audience, because the crew has put money on Bidruhi winning. And yeah, it is a duel. Mylera Clev is has done some ill deeds to Bidruhi's friends.
I can just imagine.
Declared to be a duel to the death.
I can just imagine Emma just sitting there and just thinking, "What would a big sister react to all of this?"
Yes, indeed. And
Go ahead.
I was about to ask, what will the big sister do?
I think the big sister reaction that we've seen from Moss in the past. Well, we've seen her kind of go up to this point, but she's gonna be at this point now, is that Moss is probably in a sniper nest with a rifle somewhere to make that. Bidruhi has a chance to do this, but she's super paranoid because that's her trauma. Paranoid about losing him or people like him. So she's going to make damn sure that if something seems to be going wrong.
Excellent.
She won't let that happen.
So let's start with Moss taking an action also, because normally you start the score. But I don't think getting a sniper nest in this like crowded area where like, I mean, this is Murder Alley, right? This is a place where where sites to jump down on people and rob them for their stuff are popular. So I think finding one and like securing one that isn't used by some other scoundrel for some other purpose is an action roll.
Okay. Let's see. I think I am going to be assuming that there are other snipers here. And I am going to be hunting them.
I have a proposal for one.
Okay.
So, before you showed up, Emma, we were discussing how one of the devil's bargain that Mushfik took when he kind of like bet on Bidruhi was that people from our various rivals and so on would be betting against us and betting for Mylera Clev. And we discussed that someone from Omid's faction, Jasper Jezilchis, would be here. And we decided it wouldn't be Omid, and it wouldn't make sense for it to be Nektai because Nektai is your friend. So who could it be? And I was thinking maybe Jasper himself, but it doesn't seem
Jasper
like
himself. I
have a suggestion instead of Jasper.
Clem
has a contact called Kosha Desert Guide, whom we have not seen for a while. Except whom we saw in the extra that we did. They're a sniper, and they're from the desert, and they do think dirty deeds done cheap. And Jasper's Jezilchis are a bunch of desert mercenaries.
Maybe Kosha is part of Jasper's Jezilchis. If you're okay with this, Clem, I think it's a wonderful suggestion.
Cool. Don't kill my cool desert guide friend, but go for it. Yeah, I love that.
I won't kill your desert guide.
Okay,
she's very cool.
Yeah, all right, so then I guess Gosha is the potential challenge. So you're hunting the other sniper, which is Gosha, and you're not necessarily looking to kill her, just steal her sniper nest.
Yes.
The main reason I suggest her is that she's got weird sparkcraft eye things, so she's probably pretty cool at seeing in the dark. Just wanted to say that.
All right. Let's see. Heavy load. Because we're a murder alley. And I'm going to hunt. So I think we see there is some sort of crowd here, I assume. If there's an audience. Are they like in the alley or are they like on the sides of the alley? Or is there some sort of place where they can look down? from?
They are above it, mostly. Like, this is at the bottom of the district. So there's a lot of verticality going on. Most of them are, like, on rope bridges above it, or, like, up on buildings around it, or... So most of them are looking down at the action.
I think a wonderful thing that might bring Moss and Gosha together is that Moss would be looking... Moss would be looking for logical spots to snipe from, as well as maybe there is like the slight glint of a scope somewhere, or of like metal, but it's mostly looking for spots that she would find logical to shoot from. And most of the shooting from a hiding place that she's done would have been at animals in the desert. So it's very likely that she might find a similar spot to Gosha, assuming that Gosha is here.
Yeah.
So we see her like in the audience, dressed once again as like, you know, as unassumingly as possible. Although I think we'll see that the hem of her skirt is completely soaked because she's been working in water. And she'll just be surveying or hunting, I guess.
Yeah.
She'll be scanning the environment.
Hunt is the action, to spot Gosha and her sniper nest. Okay, I think it's risky standard, and the risk is, of course, Gosha is not going to shoot at you, so that's why it's not desperate.
Yes. Is there a devil's bargain for this one?
Yes, there is a devil's bargain, actually. One of Mushfik's consequences was we discovered Captain Peregrine is here. The guy whose job it is to keep track of shady individuals from the desert, primarily. Mm-hmm. Like, he keeps track of people who come and go. And I think your devil's bargain is that he's also keeping an eye on Gosha. And he's perceptive and he is clever. So he will become a problem for you if you take this devil's bargain.
Okay, I'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So one bonus die. That's three dice.
Mm-hmm.
It's and we six. Get a one, a six, and a four. So it's six.
So you will spot her, and she has not spot you. However, I, as you take this devil's bargain, I will tick Peregrine's progress, the clock for him to figure out more about your crew, because, you know, he hasn't necessarily spotted you yet, but I think it makes sense that he is PC. I mean, he knows Bidruhi is in this fight, and now he is also aware of Gosha. We established that. That was the devil's bargain. So I think he's putting pieces together. However, you see what would be in the desert or in any other location a suitable spot for this. And it's in cover. That's why it's a good spot. It's a window of like a ramshackle hut that has been built on the roof of a different building. It's like a little temporary home. Probably it was assembled there, maybe by a Rakshasa, maybe just by a very poor person at some point. But yeah, like a little lean-to hut of a home. This is what she is occupying.
Okay.
It's a better hiding spot than a sniping spot, I think, but you can snipe from there, totally. So.
Okay. Could I potentially, like, throw a rock? Is it close enough that I could throw a rock?
Yeah. I think so. This is a cramped district, so this is not where you're, like, sniping from, you know, several blocks away. It's pretty close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm, like, tossing it across the distance of an alley. So I'm tossing a rock in there. Trying to like make it, you know, it's assuming that it's not immediately obvious where I am, or at least trying to make it that way. And the rock will have a note tied to it saying, I know where you are. That wood is only soft cover. You want to get out of there in the next 30 seconds.
Well, you rolled a six here, and I think with Hunt, you don't need to take a second action for this. I think this would just work. Gosha is not stupid. She has been given a warning and her cover has been blown. And I think she is the sort of sniper who values staying hidden more than having the perfect shot. So you throw this rock. There's like some discombobulation from up there. There's like some people look up at the thudding of the rock. And there is obviously a little bit of like she has these lenses so she can read it.
Mm-hmm.
And she takes only one look at it. And then like seconds after that, she vacates the building via back door. You don't actually see her because part of the reason she chose this was there's like an easy way in and out.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, and I'll once I'm confident that it's vacated, I'll try to unvacate it with myself.
Yes, excellent. So you move into position with your rifle, and so we have Gosha is here, Captain Peregrine is here, and we will see what else is going on. But let us cut the action back to Bidrahi, who is in now an alley of traps. And if I understood you correctly, Clem, your goal was to like leave the traps, but like sabotage them so they wouldn't work in Malera's favor.
Yeah, they'd work in our favor instead, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, so there are these wires pulled up, and Bidrahi, you know where they are. And with your heightened senses and everything, you can somehow keep track of that, even though you're blindfolded.
Yeah. Well, it's Bidrahi. So I think So currently he's thinking he's going to play this fair and square as much as possible. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. So I think he is going to... Last we saw, he took a knife to the chest, but it was fine. And I think it's still kind of like stuck in his chest in the scale mill. And he just kind of like strides forward. Mm-hmm. And I think it's not necessary that he's like making a straight beeline, like someone who can see perfectly well. I think it's like a strange sort of like loping movement. His like eyes, he's like moving as though his eyes don't matter, if that makes at all.
Yeah.
I have no idea what that would look like, but that's what it looks like. And then he kind of like strides forward. And then he says, "You can keep throwing knives towards me if you like. Or you can show me what it is that you showed all these..." It doesn't have to be a full scene, but I'd be very curious to know if I could find out any gossip about what exactly happened in Dustfall that made this woman come back.
Okay, sure.
I was going to say that from the perspective of like people in Uduasha, Mylera Clev is not someone most people know about.
Yeah.
Bidrahi knows about them because, well, of the Falling Star School connection and all that. But even then, it's like a big mystery. Like, okay, Usta Jaklev had a daughter who went off to Dustfall and then came back in some sort of disgrace. Some crime stuff happened, maybe. What's going on with that?
Yeah.
So I want to find out.
I have an answer for you. Let's not roll for this, but okay. Let's just establish now.
Yes.
And I think not much makes Dostkull different in our version of Uduasha because we haven't touched upon it. But one thing is, it has the Ashcroft family. And so I think part of the reason things did not work out for Malera is that her eternal rivals, the Lamplacks, got their hands on Ashcroft technology. She isn't quite sure if the Ashcrofts gave it to them or if they stole it, but they got a hold of like some of Earl Ashcroft, like cutting edge technology, like really good guns, stuff like that. I think it's also fitting with the theme, right? So basically the traditionalist sword fighters just got out technologied. Exactly the same thing has happened to the Khetrisi, in fact.
So I think as I stride towards her, I'll say, "I heard that you and your people got into a shooting match with people with much bigger guns. And if you were throwing knives back at them, then I can see how they absolutely laid you flat and made you look like a bunch of absolute assholes, okay? So, listen, you are a sword master, so fucking act like one and come face to face with me in a range where the guns will never matter."
Yeah.
And I'm just walking towards her.
Absolutely.
So I don't know if that does anything, or she's just determining. Yeah.
I think it's an action to provoke her, and the thing this will provoke her to do is to walk into the trapped area. This is why she used the throwing knives, right? It's like, if she hits and kills you, great. If she misses, she was hoping to provoke you into rushing her and running into the traps she had laid.
Yeah.
And now you are kind of in a position to do the same to her.
Yeah, I'm just walking towards her calmly. I'm not even running at her.
Okay. Yep.
I think it's a sway.
Mm-hmm.
It's under to persuade her.
Yep.
Is it risky standard?
It is, yeah, I think you're in a relatively well control of the situation, so it's risky standard.
Okay, so I'm bloodthirsty. I'm trying to figure out if that would reduce my effect here, because I'm trying to...
I don't think so. I think this is a god of murder, not of blind rage. So I think, you're allowed to kill people with subtlety and stealth without the god interfering.
Yeah. And you know, fuck this person. They aren't a real swordmaster anyway. Okay. So that's sway by itself. Can I have any devil's bargains?
Yes, you can. I think... this is weird because it's kind of a devil's bargain I was going to do anyway. So let me pick another one.
This doesn't have to be an angle for devil's bargain, but it's as good a time to remind as any. Is that last session we said that Jackal would interfere in the score?
Yes. Ooh. I have that in mind. There's a lot of moving parts.
Yes, yes. Everyone's here.
Yes. I mean, you did specifically draw down a lot of people to come see it. That was part of the job, right? So I think the devil's bargain angle, though, will be, and this is like somewhat like working around what you're trying to achieve. But I think that the devil's bargain will be, if you do this honorably and you like draw her towards you in such a way that she won't walk into the traps, you can have a bonus die. If you're basically willing to, what will happen then is that you guys will both like clash and have a sword fight and so on very near the traps. So it puts both you and her in danger.
Okay. I'm going to ask Salty about this because Salty invested time towards turning the traps into our favor.
No, do it.
Okay.
Because that phrase, you're very close to the traps, I think that's exciting. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is what this I expected you to say, but I wanted to check.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. It's sort of like either you could have rolled to draw her into the traps, or you can take a devil's bargain to draw her into danger, but not directly the traps. So, and you're choosing the latter.
It is a failure, however.
A 3, a 1, and a 2. Interesting. I think she...
I know where the traps are, by the way, so I don't think it makes sense for me to step into one, which is the obvious consequence otherwise.
Yeah. I was not going with that.
I know.
I think what the consequence of this failure is you roll a 3, a 1, and a 2, just because it's funny, is we had this whole theme of, like, Clem set up the traps and, like, disabled her traps and turned her crew against her and messed with the traps, and then she has been like, but I know you did that. I know that you know that I know.
Okay.
And so she is also aware exactly of where the traps are, and so your devil's bargain comes into effect that like she meets with you, she crosses blades with you and everything, and you go like, oh shit, she's trying to drive me back towards the traps, she knows where they are after all.
Alright, okay.
So the risky consequence is twofold. One of them is that like Clem's work is discovered, the other one is that your position is now desperate.
Okay.
Because Mylair is still very good with a sword, right? So even just stepping up to you and like clashing with you, he can force you backwards, and she is forcing you backwards towards the traps.
Okay. I am not going to resist either one of these because I think they're both cool. And the traps are still there. She can have figured out Clem's game. Maybe it's still going to be helpful for us. Because, I don't know, maybe her people want to bomb rush us later. And then we'll run into traps. Whatever. But I'm going to keep it as it is. So if I can still keep the spotlight, I'm going to just duel her a bit.
Okay, sure. We can keep the spotlight on you for one more action.
Yeah. So maybe I'll narrate it later, but like just roll skirmish for just general dueling.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, because of this miss, you start in a desperate position, right? So you are being forced backwards. You get in a couple of like, you know, you have to parry a lot initially here, and then you can roll and we can see how you turn it around.
Yeah, maybe. If I succeed, maybe I get to narrate. Otherwise, you narrate, I guess. I don't know. Standard effect, though?
Yes, I think it's desperate standard. And the standard effect here is not killing her. It is, she's probably some sort of clock to defeat. So let us establish that right now. I think it's a 6 clock.
Okay.
But you have some advantages that you can invoke. So other people can work on this clock, too, with the traps and etc.
Mm-hmm. 6 but... clock to duel her down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay, and I will push myself. I think it's time to push myself.
Mm-hmm.
Just quickly checking that I have no relevant bonuses. Nah, I don't.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 6, though.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you get 2 ticks to this clock and narrate how this looks as you turn around the tide. As she, like, first you back off and you're about to back into danger zone, and then somehow you turn the tide. How does that look like?
Yeah. So she, I think, rushes forward with her sword. And you described it. Remind me what the sword, how you described it?
It's a faintly curved, I was imagining it as a, not like a curved like scimitar thing, but as a fairly like long, mostly straight sword, but it has a bit of a shape to it.
Mm-hmm. So she rushes at me with the thing So she's got like a massive reach advantage on me, which is really scary, which is, and she's like rushes towards me and I have to kind of like try to dodge to the side, but like, you know, she's, that's what the curve is there for. So she's like hacking at me. So I'm like almost there. And then I sort of like duck under it with my buckler, and I have my tiny buckler sword, buckler blade combo up. Mm-hmm. And I use that to kind of like, I press it against her blade as I'm underneath her, and then I kind of like rush forward, and there's a sort of like sparks along the blade as I kind of like rush forward with the buckler under the sword so that she can't like move it down towards me. And then I kind of like get right up to her with my hook with my curved blade, but like it's an inward Kopesh looking thing. And now I'm under her guard.
Excellent.
Yes.
Yeah. So you guys are fighting in this like very dangerous area. I just, because it's cool, I'm now imagining that like you can sense that like, oh, there's a tripwire there. There's like a pressure plate over there. There's like someone has thrown caltrops over there, and you're just dancing around all of this stuff.
Yeah, I think the way it looks for me is that I can't see shit. I can just sense murder, 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 alert, danger, alert. Whereas she can, she knows exactly where things are.
And so, speaking of the Trapsmith, Clem, you were one of the few people standing out in the light. And as we established, Malera brought some of her people for this event. One of those people is now dead. One of the people who is not dead was very good friends with the dead person. And so, Clem, you were just watching the fight as a small grenade rolls in towards your feet, because you're one of the few visible people. And the leech wants revenge. What do you do?
Grenade. I know exactly what Clem would do. I'm going to pick it up and throw it right back.
Yeah. So
I've also got grenades, bitch. Do
you
dropped this, King? You dropped this.
You don't see exactly where this person came from, but but I think what makes sense here is, and the reason I'm framing this as a threat to Clem is I think it totally makes sense that the leech has abandoned the idea of help my Lyra and now is like, get revenge for my dead friend. But they are, you know, somewhere in the dark. You can't see them exactly. And I will point out that there are, like, innocents around. It was safe for him to throw a grenade at you, because you are explicitly alone in in a well-lit area. The reverse is not true. So I'm just flagging, if you do this, there is a very high risk of hitting people you do not mean to hit.
And we have a Falconer just watching. Yes, that's probably not a good idea. How about if I rolled that grenade under my Lyra's feet so she stumbles into the traps herself?
I mean, that would involve getting it close to Bidrahi, so that's also dangerous. But
Oh, Bidrahi can handle himself.
So you're just going to kick it into the alley? That's your plan?
Yeah, I think that is... Clem doesn't care about this leech. Who does he think he is?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Now, would you say this is sabotage?
Are you asking? Oh, yes. Not affected by quality of tier? Absolutely. So I guess it's actually risky for you, because you have this ability. So you're not affected by the leeches. Now, that doesn't make any sense. I think it's still desperate, but you have standard effect.
That's cool. Yeah. I think. Just pick it up and roll it. Towards Bidrahi.
Yeah.
And Valera,
All right, sure. So desperate, standard, and I guess the desperate consequences. There are many desperate consequences, but you're rolling it towards your friend for one thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But consider the je ne sais quoi that happens if I did this. Right?
Yep.
Right? You know, come on, I've been rolling hot.
Yes. What do you mean a certain something? This is not subtle.
This isn't subtle.
I can't put my finger on what this could be.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, you can do it. Desperate, standard. I think it's absolutely fair and fine.
Yeah.
I do, however, have a devil's bargain for you, and I think it's a pretty funny devil's bargain, so I will state it. You have been moving with a bunch of revolutionary factions before.
Yeah.
Like, you moved in and out of various, like, troublemakers in Udvasha. I think you will recognize this
this grenade as belonging to just such a faction. And so you and this leech, whoever he is, have at some point been part of the same gang. You're not anymore, but you have been.
I love it. Yes. That sounds very fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. What does this come under? Part of me is like, is this precision? Well, it's not precision shooting from a distance, but I think it's precisely getting it into place. So it could be hunt, yep. I suppose.
Yes, it could.
Now, of course, I really don't want it to be hunt because I've got zero D in that. But instead, since I think this goes really well with the devil's bargain, I'm going to use traumatic flashbacks to, I spend two stress to roll my trauma plus one, and then a devil's bargain on top of that, and explain how my traumatic flashback drives to me to succeed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess you know the length of the fuse. You have seen these things explode before. Like,
oh, yeah. It's out on the battlefield in Skovlan.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I will let you. I will let you decide then. This man in the grey suit—is he a Skovlander and he's with their cause, or he was with their cause and you were with their cause before, or is he one of the fire speakers, one of the like anti, one of the people who like blow up factories because they're like against Akarosi technology? I think it makes sense that he's one of these two factions. So I will let you pick which one.
Yeah, I'd like to say fire speakers. I think that'd be fun. Plus, they're here. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you and he were formerly as affiliated with the factory burners. Good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. So we're looking desperate standard. Mm-hmm. Three die. Awesome. So I've put it under hunt.
It's also worth remembering that the fire speakers are also Uduashan supremacists, not Iruvian supremacists. Uduashan supremacists.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. They absolutely are. They are an interesting gang. And, well, it sort of makes sense one of them would ally with Mylera Clev, I guess, having come home from the... Yeah. Either way, you roll a six. So the consequence of this, Bidderhi, is... I'm not going to say that this, like, immediately ends the duel, right? The consequence of this, I think, rather, is that you and Mylera kind of have to break off the duel because there is a bomb rolling into the alleyway. And so what I will do is I will tick... two ticks to Mylera's clock, just because she has to, like, get the fuck out of the way. Does it make sense?
What sort of grenade is it? Like, is it, like, fuse
it's
grenade?
It's a small... It's a fuse, yeah. It's, you know, it's the classic, like, you know, 18th century grenade of the kind that people have in this setting, which is, it's a little ball with a fuse, and when the fuse burns out, the thing explodes.
Oh man, the thing I want to do is so stupid, but it might literally get me killed.
Hold on.
I want to use the tip of my sword to cut the tip of the fuse off.
Okay. Excellent.
Because that will be the most badass possible thing I could do.
Yes.
Better yet, just, you know, swing your sword and have the air current put the fuse out.
Yes.
Well, if you want to cut off the fuse, I go ahead. It's desperate. It has... I think a standard effect in disabling the threat of the grenade. It will not contribute towards defeating Mylera, but the grenade already has. So if you do this, the effect will be, one, you look cool, and two, you can stay in place as Mylera, like, runs away, which makes you look even cooler, I guess.
Very cool. Or, the other thing, where is she running to?
Back towards where she came from, towards her second.
I see.
This is just to avoid the grenade. This is not like she's not leaving the fight, but you know, it's a grenade. You move away. This is just the thing to do. She's just running for cover, which there is further back in the alley.
Okay. In fact, then what I'm instead of like potentially blowing myself up trying to stop this grenade, and you know, out of character, we all want this grenade to go up, right? It's awesome. Yes. It's going to be horrible for our crew. Our heat is going to skyrocket, but we all want this grenade to go off, right?
Yep.
I am going to chase Mylera into the darkness. She's trying to rush back to safety. That's not where she's going.
Okay. So I think that how I will frame this is because Clem rolled a six, you can just automatically do this, I think. Because if Clem had generated a consequence, it would have been like... Bidruhi is in danger of blowing up or whatever. But now there's, you know, the fuse is just long enough that both you and Mylera can get away. But she is definitely thrown off her game. Like, she's afraid, she's confused. She's running away in the dark. She doesn't know precisely where she is anymore because all the stuff she memorized is now out the window. She's afraid.
Mm, yeah. And I'm chasing her and I'm making... I'm not making like chicken noises. I'm not going like... Claw, 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 claw. What I'm doing is instead caw, caw, caw. But like a crow to remind her of like running for her life in crow's foot like an absolute coward.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And as you do this, Moss, you from your vantage point can see into the crowd gathered below you and can see a man in a gray suit who has just hurled this grenade. And I think, you know, you saw the grenade when it rolled at Clem's feet because that's when everyone saw it. But you're in a position to see where it came from. And you see this man in the gray suit withdraw, be like, shit, that didn't work. And reach, he's carrying with him a bag. Like a leather bag, which is your typical leech's bandolier. He's going to get more stuff, and he's still going to try to get at Clem. He's out for blood. What do you do?
All right. Where is he withdrawing to?
He's going to, like, behind some of the other bystanders, and he's going to actually get down to ground level with Clem. So he's going down some stairs. I think his plan is, before he was above Clem, now he's going to try to get in, like, behind Clem.
All right. I think what's going to happen is Moss considers shooting this guy for a moment. But even though the grenade is still like about to go off and that's going to cause a lot of chaos. Shooting into a crowd is a whole different deal.
Yep.
And if she can do it differently, she's going to do it differently. So what she's going to do is she knows where he's going.
Mm-hmm.
So she is going to like try and be there faster. And I think
get down and cut him off. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's going to get down and cut him off. She's trained in this place, if I remember correctly.
Yep. Moss is actually familiar with the environment. So
yes. And she has purloined arts of the red sash, meaning she can like push herself to be anywhere on the battlefield if there's a battlefield that she can see.
Yeah.
So I think she's going to use that to outspeed him. And when he comes out of the staircase on ground level, she's going to knife him.
Okay. So... The pushing yourself means you can just automatically get to him. Knifing him, though, is another matter. But you can absolutely do an action for that. Like, joining him in the stairs where he's, like, away from everyone else, in the dark, no one can see him. It's a perfect spot for an ambush. So I think... It's still a knife deployed against an armed person, so I still think it's risky.
Yeah.
But I think you have standard effect. And here, in the sense, standard effect is you can just, like, kill him or seriously hurt him.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
But render him not a threat. He's not a tough combatant, so.
Right. Now, I'm quickly looking at the list of actions. I think prowl makes the most sense. In any case.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I have zero dice in that, but it's simply the one that it is. And the push will give her one die in it.
Okay. Yeah, the push will give you one die, so there's no point in a devil's bargain. You have one for getting into position. Yep.
Yes.
Moss has zero dice in prowl. Moss? Yes. Well,
she doesn't sneak by being hidden, usually, by being visually obscured or silent. She moves by being... Like, she sneaks via finesse, usually, but that's not what's happening now.
Mm.
Yeah. Yep.
All right.
Would you like an assist with that?
Oh, I've already rolled. Sorry.
It's okay. I will permit an assist. I have not seen the roll, so I, as GM, am not affected by
this.
Would
you like an assist with that?
I would like an assist with that.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, Clem's the one being targeted, right? I think. Mm-hmm.
Yes, you're very close.
Yeah. Z shifts into the lamplight properly. Like, just the perfect spot to... have a grenade thrown at them again.
Yeah, so just be a very appealing target. Yeah, fair enough. Moss has a bonus die because this guy is not looking anywhere except at Clem.
Mm-hmm. Is there a moment of understanding between Clem and Moss, or is this something that happens separately?
I think maybe, there is, yeah.
Yeah, there's like brief eye contact, like, I got you. An exchange of I got yous.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
All right, second die. I'll just roll a d6.
Yep.
So it was a 1 and a 3.
Okay, yeah.
Very exciting.
So, yes. So this, unfortunately, does not go great. Let me think for a second here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm going to take this in a totally different direction than I had planned, actually. But you sneak up on this guy, you have a look at him, and you have been given all of these visions and all of this like fucked up future visions by Saida. You also hang around with a ghost-possessed tree a fair amount. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what you realize is you recognize this guy, not from your own like waking life, but from the dreams of the tree. The ghost that you have been looking after, it knows this guy. He is a clue to the identity of the lost amnesiac ghost.
I cannot kill him.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah. I need this
guy. That is precisely what happens. Yeah, you need him alive. And that is your consequence. So you're unable to stop him. You realize that you need him alive. You're probably like briefly like frozen by these visions.
Mm-hmm.
Right? To give him some time to act. So he's not attacking Clem yet, but he manages to get into position. Basically, you're about to stop him on the stairs. Then you go like, shit, I've seen this man in my dreams. And then he pushes his way past you.
Okay. Cool. Yeah.
What do you do next? I think let's keep the spotlight on Moss there. So it's not that he's in a position to attack Clem like right away, but basically you lost this perfect ambush position you had. He just passes down the stairs unambushed.
I say, I'm gonna... maybe this is a resistance. And it's a resistance to like him pushing past me.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to try and get his attention by saying, and I don't know what it is, but the name of the construction site where the ghost is buried.
Yeah, lovely. We didn't name it, actually. I think we said it was tied to Begum Bashundara, our favorite construction overlord in the setting. So what's a cool name for the site? Like the something site?
Is this the construction site where the tree is? Or
yes. Yeah.
It was in the basement, right?
Yeah.
Which district? I forgot everything. Which district was it? Was it in Udaput?
I think it was in Bundervest, wasn't it? I dimly remember the river being close to it.
Okay. Yeah. The new harbor area redevelopment and Revivification Project Heights.
Yes. Well, so it's New Harbor, the New Harbor site. Well, that's what people would actually call it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Prince, say my name. Say the name I said.
No.
Okay.
So I just like speak up and I say, hey, the New Harbor site. You know what happened there?
Yeah. Absolutely. Cool.
And so I still have to roll and resist.
Yeah. So the effect is you won't be able to take him out, but you will be able to, like, you don't lose the opportunity to interact with him.
Yeah. I think it's quick thinking, so it's insight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a 3, so 3 stress.
Yeah. And, I think he stops, and we have learned that this guy was, like, Uduashan supremacist, very much in so many words. So he stops, he turns, and I think what makes sense is he was probably responsible for sabotaging it. So it's not so much that he says that, right? He doesn't say it in so many words, but he looks at you, he like recognizes that you have brought this up, and he's trying to gauge if you're like friend or foe of the cause. And then he simply says, I think, someone wasn't respecting the history of the place. And he like feels quite strongly about this.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, again, he doesn't tell you that like, yeah, I blew it up, but he blew it up.
Right. Does that like with the dream that I had, with the dream that I saw, does it seem like this is a person who just knew the construction worker that was buried
yes.
there?
Their usual MO is their usual MO for this faction, these like sabotage guys, is they usually infiltrate the organizations they target. So he probably did that. He was probably posing as a worker or an architect or engineer or something. Remind me if I'm making that up. I don't remember the faction exactly, but I think that's a thing like they're known to do.
A lot of them are in fact secretly like academics and engineers themselves.
Exactly, yeah. So I think you know enough from context that he posed as an engineer at the site. He was like, I'm just going to set up these totally normal acts on this pillar. Don't worry about it. And then it blew. Which also means that he knew the people he killed, which is pretty cold-hearted of him.
Mm-hmm. One of the people who died there is still there. A ghost remains, not absorbed by the flame.
Yeah.
My name is Moss. I'm dealing with it. If you want that history of that site respected, maybe we should meet sometime and break this off.
Go ahead and roll. I think it's like a command or a sway or something. And the reason that this is a roll is that when you say like there is a ghost, he's an Uduashan supremacist, right? That's borderline heresy.
It's like, I know.
There's no ghosts here.
So I'm going to sway him. That's one die.
It's risky standard again.
Is there a devil's bargain?
What's an interesting devil's bargain for? Okay. I think succeed or fail, you have to give him like your full name, which is pretty unique. You said like my name is Moth,
mm-hmm.
but if you like tell him Moth on the rung that breaks your ankle.
Yeah.
Then it's no longer like a moniker or something. It's a very unmistakable name. It will be very easy to find. It helps with the persuasion of like, I want to talk to you.
Yeah.
But it's also, you know, like giving a guy who blows stuff up for a living your name and possibly your home is a bit of a risk.
I'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
Risky standard. Yeah, and I think it also like, she does it because she knows that like, That's telling him I'm Kethrissi. And it also tells him maybe something about the ghost and why even though I don't think I quite know that he's an Uduashan supremacist. I don't exactly know. But it might give him some like clue that I'm worth talking to about this.
Exactly, yeah. Makes sense.
That's a 5.
Okay. So, what's going to happen here is that he, like, pauses, he looks at you very seriously, and he goes like, Kethrissi. Ah, shit, of course. And I think he connects the dots that, like, the Kethrissi have ways to preserve ghosts. Mm-hmm. So he understands this. The risk is simply, now he knows about the tree.
Mm-hmm.
An awful lot of people are knowing about the tree, and you can just see him like connect the dots immediately, go like, that's there. Oh shit, that's actually like a really powerful like thing. Imagine if we could use ghosts against our enemies. Hell yeah. So he gets ideas. That is the consequence.
Yeah. And I think when Moss sees this, she immediately knows like, okay, we have to get all the information we can get out of this guy and then kill him. Because the tree can... She's still paranoid, and the tree cannot be risked.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think he is willing to talk to you for a moment here and now, and maybe we'll cut away from this immediate scene as you have his attention.
Mm-hmm.
But meanwhile, the person we have not checked in with is Mushfik, who yes. is still looking for Clev's people. And now there was a grenade hurled from somewhere, and I think you've noticed what's been going with like Moss and Clem, because you're, you know, even though it's dark, you're keeping track of each other, right? But do you want to pursue this, or is there something else you're worried about?
Well, I'm with Peregrine, right? And
yeah, and he is definitely concerned.
He's definitely concerned. While all this was going on, I was entertaining the idea of somehow like making this seem like more like the Falling Star's fault rather than ours. Like, because I don't think there's any way we can cover the fact that we're here.
Okay. Right? Yep.
But maybe
you can absolutely have a conversation with him. Like, tell him about this. Yeah.
I don't think Mushfik is very trustworthy looking, so there has to be some other way to do it.
Okay, so not telling him directly, but making it. Yeah, I can buy it. Mm-hmm.
What would the best way, though? I don't know, maybe get the crowd to start chanting something that makes it look like, oh yeah.
Absolutely. I think that's a great idea. Like, getting the crowd to think that, like, the Falling Star is throwing around grenades now. It's like, I mean, they are, but that's because one of the cohorts went rogue, but the crowd doesn't know that, right?
Yeah.
Like, my Lyra Clev so far has been cheating kind of subtly. This was not subtle, so.
It's a chant that's like, grenades falling like stars.
Oh, yeah, there you go. That's why the Falling Star.
Throwing falling stars, yeah. Absolutely. Okay, sure. So it's probably commanding the crowd, or maybe it's swaying the crowd. You can come up with something else if you think it's more appropriate.
I mean, when you're playing the crowd, it's Consort, isn't it? I'm part of the crowd. I'm getting in on... Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
We also have a cohort of people who could also be chanting.
That's well, true. only one of them can be chanting.
Mm-hmm. But yes,
there's six of them.
You can be assisted by the crew. You have Pejal. He's good at... chanting, probably. I guess in the background he goes like, Falling Star!
Yeah, just a good old, like, you know, whoa, Falling Star, throwing bombs from the sky, Falling Star.
Yes. Exactly, a good old that.
The classic, yeah.
Sports ball.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So you have upgraded your crew to skulks, and I actually think them being skulks will matter here, because it's not a very thug thing to do, but I think it falls under the skulks purview to manipulate the crowd more. So all right. So you roll Consort, I will roll your crew.
Okay, so it's risky standard, is it? But I'm gonna push myself for an extra die.
Yep.
They should have been rolling just a reminder. The crew should have just been rolling one dice.
Okay. Well, it doesn't matter, because I'll take off their second dice then. But everything is fives, so but thank you. Mm-hmm. So they should have rolled a single die, but it's a five, so it doesn't affect things either way. So what will happen here is, I'll just put my cards on the table with this, and I think Mushfik, you are in a position to stop it by resisting if you want.
Sure.
So, what Peregrine will put together two and two and realize that, like, okay, the Falling Star are actually weirdly invested in getting rid of the Rising Moon Sword School. This is not just like personal, there is politics involved. He's going to figure this out, he's going to put pieces together, and this all means that he's going to finish his progress clock, and your effect here will be he's on your side. Like, he will decide that you are the innocent victims in this. Your consequence will be he will become your ward boss. You seem like a good crew to hang around. He might as well collect some money off of you.
Captain Peregrine's corrupt.
I'm going to resist only because I can't. I can't believe that Captain Peregrine will be corrupt.
Yes. Yep.
That's my bet we're paying him off with.
Yeah.
So maybe you resist the part where he's our ward boss. But he's on our side.
Mm-hmm. He's on our side, but he's not corrupt.
Yeah. I will finish his investigation progress, and here is the thing. Like, now he has your crew figured out. That just happens either way. But if you resist it, he will not, you know, personally take advantage of it. So fair enough.
No, I can't believe this man would be on the take. Yep. So I'm resisting. It seems like resolve.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. That's not bad. Just one stress.
Okay. One stress. Yeah, yeah, fair enough. So Peregrine, I think he would just depart the score at this point. He's shown up in a lot of your scores to just observe what's going on and try to piece things together. And in this case, he pieces things together in your favor. But as people start chanting Falling Star, he gets like a very worried look. And he's like, he's not about to confront your crew here and now. He'll swing by your lair later. He knows where you live. So he just leaves. But he does it with a like, you know, makes some notes, goes like, shit, this is bad. And then he takes off.
Mm. All right. Yeah, just like a cop, not actually do anything.
Yeah. Or maybe he's going to get to the cops, in fact. Yeah. He's just one guy. He's here undercover. So it's not like, you know, he may be a badass in a lot of ways, but if he just pulls out a gun, it's not like he can make everyone present stand down.
No, I know.
Everyone, please, please calm down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Also, there's grenades and shit being thrown around.
Yes, and I think at the moment he withdraws is when the grenade finally goes off and it blows up down in the alley, and for a moment everything is illuminated, and we cut back to Bidrohi and Mylera, I think, as there's like a peal of thunder, the alleyway is illuminated, she can see where she's going for a brief moment, and she turns around, like as Bidrohi is following, and, you know, raises her sword in defense as you come down on her, like an angry god.
Mm-hmm.
Here close the doors to the House of Endings. Those who dwell within are Soheb, called Cloak, Adiat, called Soap, Sarmitry, called Tree, Salty, and Emma. I have been Prince, your host. Our city of Uduasha is based on Blades in the Dark by John Harper and Evil Hat Productions, with special thanks to Johnstone Metzger. Follow us on Twitter or support us on ko-fi.com/desperateattune. If you want to engage further with us, we also have a Patreon at patreon.com/desperateattune, where you will get our newsletter, extra content, and updates from Uduasha.
Next week on Desperate Attune.
Look, it's not about you. It's not about your sword school. You may practice as much as you want. That's never what it was about. It's about Saida.